Ocean FM.
You're very welcome to Arts Northwest. An Áit a Roimh, go dtí Arts Northwest, ag Craoladh ón Ionad na Nglanta, I Dlúthghnín, broadcasting from the Glens Arts Centre in Manorhampton. My name is Brendan Murray. On sound, we have Mark Gavin. In the first of a series of programmes on local musicians of national and international renown, I'm delighted to welcome Liam Kelly of Dervish, flute player extraordinaire. You're very welcome, Liam.
Brendan, thanks very much for having
me. Liam, you're a long time with the band Dervish, more than 30 years. And I know that in the last couple of years, obviously, the last year or so, there's been very little happening in terms of music, live performance and that, and indeed recording, I'm sure, is proven difficulty. But tell us, Liam, you're living in Drumahaire in lovely Leitrim.
That's right.
Where are you from originally?
Well, I grew up in Sligo town. That's where my father's from Sweetwood. It was just out the road here from
which was the name of your album.
Which was the name of the album that I used. Yeah, yeah. It seemed like the natural name
and aptly titled. Yeah.
Yeah, it worked out well.
Given you played the flute,
the title. Yeah. Given I played the flute, yeah, and the front cover I put on a wooden table with a wooden flute, whole lot. So, and it's a very nice name anyway. Sweetwood has a nice ring to it. But that's where my father came from, and of course, he moved it to Sligo, 55-60 years ago, I guess now, and we all grew up in the town of Sligo. My mother then was from Ballymote, so it was a good combination of Sligo and Leitrim. But yeah, I grew up in Sligo town. I'm a townie, I'm afraid.
In terms of, where you think Dervish stand in the pantheon of Irish music, I think they would be classed as being on the A-list.
Yeah, I mean, look, I suppose in any kind of music, longevity is the kind of the key to whether you're going to be liked long term or not, or be fairly successful, So, I mean, we are kind of lucky with traditional Irish music. It is liked in so many places around the world. It gives us the different platforms in different countries to be able to travel to. Sometimes I don't think that people who just live in Ireland realise how popular traditional music is all over the world, and I mean everywhere. So that gives bands like Dervish a huge platform and an opportunity to travel. And of course, the Chieftains kind of paved a big way, in fairness to them, before all the other bands like ourselves came along, because they did kind of everything first, and the Chancy Brothers then in America, of course. So you have to tip our hands to those kind of people, or hats to those kind of people as well, who kind of paved the way for bands like Dervish and Altan and Lunasa to follow on, and Dadan, and of course, in the Botty Band in early days. But yeah, we've managed to stick together. Five of the six, the original members are still there. The newest member now is there 23 years, so he's, as you could say, nearly just in the door. We're 32 years this year since we're together, and which is great. And I mean, by and large, we're still the best of friends. We get on very well together. The music's been going great. I think we've done 12 studio albums and a couple of compilations and all of that as well. So 14 CDs or so, which led up to the Great Irish Songbook there the year before last year being released. But unfortunately, the pandemic swept in and stopped everybody in their tracks, unfortunately, but that's just the way it goes.
And for the Great Irish Songbook, you brought in many well-known guest vocalists.
We did, yeah. We were lucky on that score. It was actually it was an American company, Rounder Records, they're called. And we had met them, a couple of those guys. Ken Irwin was the main guy that we'd met over a few years, who came along to see us in a couple of concerts, and they put the idea out that we'd pick some of the best iconic songs from Ireland, which you can imagine the original list had about 120 songs on it. So how were we going to whittle down that list? And we had quite a long list of guests. I mean, at the state, it's just gone back to 2016, believe it or not. It took about 3 years to put the whole project together. But by the time we got the guests interested, and when they were available to do it at the time, to put it all together, it took quite a long time. And in many cases, we gave a list of songs to different artists. So, for instance, Imelda May, you know, got a list of 10 songs and she just picked Molly Malone straight away, and Steve Earle just picked the Galway Shawl. So we didn't force any of the songs on any of the artists. We just said, you know, which of these songs would be your favourite one to attempt? And they all kind of picked their favourite song nearly straight away, which we went along with, which was fantastic. It was just the logistics of it took a little while, you know, because we had to do the demos here in Ireland, and for a lot, like the likes of Vince Gill and Steve Earle, and that, you couldn't get them to travel over to Ireland to do it, you know. So we had to send all the tracks over to them. They put the vocal over the final track, and then we had that done. But isn't it great that with technology that you can do that?
Absolutely. And I mean, you also had Brendan Gleeson and Kate Rusby. Yeah. I mean, a very impressive lineup. And of course, that same year, then you were awarded a Lifetime Achievement Award by the BBC.
Yeah, like we've toured a lot, obviously, in the UK. I mean, it's such an easy, you know, it's easy to just hop on a plane and skip over. You're there in 45 minutes. So the England, Scotland and Wales, we've played there, you know, for the last 25 years or more. And we've done lots of shows on BBC Two Folk Radio, and with Mark Ratcliffe. You probably know Mark or have heard of him.
Yes.
And yeah, we were delighted to get that in 2019. And then, you know, the album was launched. We launched it over at the Palladium, the Great Irish Songbook, which was a fantastic night. And then we just did a concert back in January 2020 at Celtic Connections. And we're lining up, obviously, a lot of stuff for 2020. The Songbook was supposed to do a fall tour, as they call it, in September, October last year, and all of that. And of course, all of that had to fell by the wayside, which is unfortunate. But look, these things happen. It was great to get the BBC award after 30 years in the business.
Absolutely.
It's nice to be recognised for that, you know.
Internationally, it's such a esteemed institution as the BBC. Yeah, congratulations
great.
On that.
Great.
We'll have a track from that album, The Great Irish Songbook from 2019.
Great.
Sorrow and sadness, bitterness, grief, memories I have of you won't leave me in peace. My mind is running back to the west coast of Clear, thinking of you and the times we had there. I knew I'd find you there. I stood on the white strand, and you were everywhere. Vivid memories fade, but the mood still remains. Wish I could go back.
David Gray there with The West Coast of Clare from Dervish's The Great Irish Songbook in 2019. The wonderful Andy Irvine song, and I'm sure you'll agree, a unique and very special take on it. We're talking with Liam Kelly of the Sligo-based band Dervish, mostly from the Northwest area. But Liam has good Leitrim roots and indeed lives in Dromahair currently. Liam, can I take you back and talk about the start of Dervish and maybe how did that all come about?
Yeah, well, going back to the mid-80s, we used to play a lot of sessions in a pub called Shoot the Crows, which is still there.
Very famous music pub in Sligo, yeah.
It is, yeah. And like the band kind of grew out of the sessions. We used to play there every Thursday night. That session was going on, you know, from the early 80s Right, I emigrated to London in 1987, so we played right up until that time. I used to play there actually with Joe O'Dowd even when I was at school in the late 70s into the early 80s as well. But the sessions with Dervish kind of built up over time with myself and Shane and Brian McDonough's from Dublin. He moved to Sligo to go to art college and never went back to Dublin. He's still there. And Michael Holmes is from Sligo as well. So the core of the band kind of, the Thursday night sessions, it kind of grew out of that. And when we got close to the All-Ireland FLA, the first All-Ireland FLA in 1989, I was still living in London at the time, but obviously I came home.
So you were working in London, Liam?
I was. I left, you know, the 80s in Ireland, as you probably know, what it was a fairly bleak time. There was no work. I was kind of late to leave. I didn't want to go in the beginning because I knew I wasn't going to get as much music over there, which I didn't. I didn't really know many musicians there. And then you're working, you don't have time. But the FLA 1989, at that stage, when we were coming home for the FLA, there was the record room in Sligo. They're still there, actually. Aidan Mannion and Kevin Flannery, they wanted to bring out an album of local musicians for the first FLA. So they kind of approached us and said, could you do an album for that? So we did. Martin McGinley, the Donegal fiddle player, was a good friend of ours, so we asked him to come in on it. And we just launched the album, The Boys of Sligo. How original was that? Anyway, luckily there was five males in it. But we launched it at the FLA and kind of didn't think that much more of it. You know, I went back to London after the FLA. And the album kind of got a fairly good attention. And the next thing we knew, we were getting inquiries to see, were we a band? Could we do a couple of concerts here and there? And I was still living in London. So by the time we came home for the second FLA in 1990, the reputation had built up a bit. The album had got a good bit of airplay. And then I had thought about moving home. So I moved home in 91. And then we decided, you know, rather than to bring out another album, we needed a singer. And that's where Cathy Jordan came in. I was actually in college with Cathy's sister, Rose. That's how I met Cathy in Sligo. They're from Roscommon. So when Cathy joined the band, then we proceeded to record Harmony Hill, which was the first album with Cathy in 91. And that was released in 92. And after that, the rest is history. You know, we kind of, once we had another album, we kind of started taking it a bit more seriously at that stage. But we were still all working in different jobs and that. So it was about 96, maybe 97, before we actually went full time at the music. It kind of came to a crossroads. Are we going to give this a real go, or are we just going to work and play part time? So we decided to go kind of full time in 96, 97, and never look back since, you know.
Fantastic, yeah. And I suppose over all those years, you know, I mean, you've played in America, throughout Europe. You know what? If you were saying too, because the whole music industry, and particularly around recording, you know, it relies on touring, doesn't it, for a band to sustain itself? What would you say to a band starting out today?
Well, it certainly does. You've hit the nail on the head there. Like the touring thing had actually become more important in the last maybe decade because of the digitization of music. Because, you know, CD sales since you know, in the last 10 or 15 years have really dropped off. So before we all had iPhones and iPods and downloadable music, that has really changed the whole picture. You know, for an older band like ourselves, it took us a while to get used to that whole scene. But even bands that are greater than ourselves, old catalogues and, you know, major bands have gone back on the road because they just don't sell as many albums anymore. But the positive side, I suppose, I see younger musicians coming up now, they're able to put an album up online straight away on Bandcamp or put it up on iTunes. They use Facebook and Twitter and all the platforms to promote, which is a great thing. Recording studios, some people could nearly set up a studio in their own house at this stage. So the technology has become really widely available for more and more people to record, which just makes it easier for everybody to get music out there.
I'm going to play a track now, a slow air from your album Sweetwood, An Rautu Egan Garrig. The beautiful an raibh tú ag an garraigh le Liam Kelly ar í speisialta ar an gláir seo. Liam, your playing is stated as being kind of or considered to be rooted in the North Connacht flute tradition.
Mm.
Could you, to the uninitiated, I obviously can appreciate that every area in the country, like you have Donegal fiddle playing, you know, I lived in Galway for a long time, Connemara style. What do you think signifies North Connacht tradition?
Well, North Connacht we consider to be kind of like Sligo, Leitrim, Roscommon, that northwest pocket, you know, and flute playing from flute and fiddle were really the two biggest instruments in this part of the world, you know, for the last up to about 20 or 30 years ago. Now, you know, kids are playing every instrument from concertinas to harp to banjo, and, you know, kids are playing instruments from all genres, which is great. But traditionally, the fiddle and flute would have been the two biggest instruments. I suppose that music from the Northwest is really, it mostly reels and jigs, you know, played at a fairly high tempo with a lot of ornamentation, and played at a fairly high pace as well. And, you know, when I was growing up, I would have been listening to, obviously, Matt Malloy and, you know, Seamus Tansey were the two biggest names to play the flute back then. And, of course, John McKenna was another project that I'm going to be involved with recently as well. But, you know, Patsy Hanley, also from Roscommon, John Carlos from, you know, these guys were kind of the legends that I looked at when I was a teenager in flute playing. I was lucky when I was growing up in Sligo, I was taught by a great local teacher, Carmel Gunning, who's originally from Giva but lived most of her life in Sligo. It's still there. She was the first really good teacher that I had, and I went to Carmel for about 4 years, from about 12 up to 15 or 16 years of age, and learned most of my music from her at that time. And of course, the other big tin whistle player who was on the scene at that point was Mary Bergen. You know, she was like the one,
yes,
the person who recorded. Like back then, only the top musicians really got to record.
Sure.
It was only the Mary Bergens and the Matt Malloys and the Seamus Tansies and Paddy Keenans that got into the studio, you know, whereas everybody can go to a studio now. But they were like the icons, you know.
Yes.
And even mentioning, you know, recently we've lost the great Joe Burke. Because I played the accordion as well. I used to go to accordion classes with myself and Shane Mitchell. That's how we met. And we used to go to Alfie Joe Dineen, and who was also a Leitrim man who worked with my father. So he used to teach us the accordion. And of course, Joe Burke was also, you know, people might know that he was a huge influence on myself and Shane's music. He also played the flute, which many people mightn't have heard him that often. So I just wanted to mention about Joe Burke.
Sure, yeah,
who lost last week there.
Absolutely. Bless him, and RT paid tribute to him.
Yes.
Yeah, great. Well, here it is. The Humours of Lissa Dell, Liam Kelly. Thank you. wonderful sound of our guest this week, Liam Kelly, on whistle on The Humours of Lissadell from his album Sweetwood, which was released the late noughties, was it?
2010, I think.
2010,
it was a decade ago now.
Yeah, yeah. Tell us... Liam, when you were growing up in Sligo and playing music, and I suppose in a way when it's part of your heritage, you kind of don't be thinking about it as a job. Did you realize, or did you think, or did you have ambitions that you'd go into in music full time?
Well, when I was younger, no. I mean, I used to, like, the big bands back in the late 70s, early 80s that I would have been listening to would have been the Bothy Band and Planxty, obviously, and the Dannon and Stockton's Wing, and, of course, Clannad, you know. But we would go to see these bands playing live, but I never thought that could be me up on the stage playing instead of Matt Malloy or, you know, any of the musicians. You don't, sure. You don't think like that when you're a teenager.
Yes.
And you don't ever think that you'd be good enough, first of all, or you don't ever think that you'll get the opportunity to do it. And even into my 20s, you know, I went to college in Sligo and qualified as a draftsman and ended up going off, worked at that for a wee while. I went off to London and came back. It was a handy job, but my heart was never really in it. The heart was always in the music. It became a decision around 96, 97 to go at it. But certainly I would never, you know, going to school in the late 70s and 80s, a career in music wasn't something that was ever talked about in Irish music at all, you know?
Sure. And of course, no regrets.
Oh, no regrets. No, I couldn't go back.
And I mean, it's unique, actually. A lot of people mightn't be aware or forgotten. He also represented Ireland in the Eurovision Song Contest.
Oh, we did, yeah. God, if anybody can remember what year that was, I'll send them a free album. It was actually in 2007. I can't believe it's that long ago, but it seems like a long ago.
And where was it, Liam?
It was in Helsinki, actually. And, like, we met some great friends in RTE back then. We, you know, it gave us an inroad into a whole other scene, not necessarily our scene, but at the same time, we met some great friends through that whole project, and we were treated first well by RT, and everything was going great up until the last half an hour, until the votes didn't start coming in. And then we realised, oops. But yeah. I don't have any regrets about doing that. Sometimes in life you make decisions that we're not always going to make. I wouldn't consider it a bad decision anyways, you know, but we didn't get the results we wanted for sure. I think 10 days or two weeks later we were on a trip with President Mary McAleese at the time over to Lithuania and Latvia, as we were part of the cultural part of that trip with four dancers from Riverdance. So we quickly forgot about the result and the whole furore about it, you know.
Yeah,
so we still had a career. We were lucky. We had a career before the Eurovision, and we just went back to doing what we did afterwards, you know, which is not
absolutely
not a lot of people could say that, you know.
Absolutely. It's nice to take a little down a side road. It wouldn't be something that Dervish would be, or traditional music would normally associate with Eurovision.
No.
And it's probably to your credit that you didn't score well.
I'll take that any day.
Anyway, Liam, it's been an absolute pleasure. And can I just ask you, how are you finding the lockdown, and what are the plans, or have you any...
You know, we really miss playing live music. That's what musicians like to do most. I have been involved in a couple of things. I've often been approached. I've done a few Skype lessons here and there with people, but you have to rely on the broadband for that. So I am in the process of just about to release trying to do an online teaching thing where it's pre-recorded videos as opposed to trying to do it live on Zoom or something. Sometimes that can be a dodgy connection, or it'll drop out. So I hope to launch that in the next few weeks.
Well, and, keep us posted on that, yeah.
I will. And of course, I was supposed to do the recording, re-record some of John McKenna's music for last year. That was supposed to be done. I actually had half the album recorded before I went to America last February, up at the house, up in tents in John McKenna's restored house there. So I had half the album done, which is about 18 or 19 tracks. There's about 40 tracks on the original double CD.
Wow.
And it was using John McKenna's old instrument, which was sent back by a guy who owned it in New York, and it was restored by Hammy Hamilton. And I ended up getting the loan of that from the John McKenna Society. So I had half that done. But of course, last year's lockdown scuppered those plans. But I hope to Maybe do volume one and release that for June for this year when the John McKenna Festival would normally run the second weekend in June.
Well, the very best of luck with that, Liam, and many thanks. We wish you well during the rest of the lockdown and in all your endeavours and continued success with Dervish. We're going to finish up with your version of Black Pats by the great Donegal musician Tommy Peoples. Once again, many thanks to Liam Kelly of Dervish. Tune in next week when we'll be having the first of a two-part series with the great Steve Wickham of Waterboys fame, with fellow musicians Anna Houston and Pat Cohen, recorded here live in the Glen Centre, socially distanced. Don't forget, if you're looking for entertainment over the next week, the Hawkswell continues its Tunes from Sligo with Oisín McDiarmida and Samantha Harvey. You'll get all details on the Hawkswell website. Wemsha Brendan Murray, Murgaid Slán, Gudí and Cade Shachtanella, and many thanks to Mark Gavin and Jonas Dello on sound. Many thanks also to our sponsors Pubble, the Arts Council and Leitrim County Council. This show is available on podcast through Ocean FM, Arts Northwest, on all platforms.